Welcome to the DEI Uncorked podcast, where we look inside the bottle and inside Winebo at its diversity, equity, and inclusion. We are going to get curious, ask questions, and learn from each other. So let's get started. Hi, everyone. I'm Nisa Anderson. I'm the sales administrator from California, and I'm excited for today's Uncorked show as we are interviewing our own team members within the world of Winebo, talking about Passover, its history, and its traditions. As always, I am joined by our co-host, Brian Cole. Hi, Brian. How are you doing today?
Hey, Nisa. I'm doing great. Hope everything's going well with you as well.
Absolutely.
Well, hello, everyone. My name is Brian Cole. I'm the director of Fleet Services based out in the Midwest. Today's Uncorked podcast is all about the holiday of Passover. And today we're joined by Matt Rosenberg and Andy Rothbaum. Welcome, Matt and Andy, to the Uncorked podcast. We're certainly happy to have you join us on our podcast recording today. If you don't mind, please share with us and our listeners a little bit about yourself and why you've joined us today. And we're going to start off with Matt, if you don't mind. Introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself.
So, hey, everybody. Matt Rosenberg. I'm a portfolio manager here in Georgia. Obviously Jewish. I wouldn't be on here if we weren't talking about Passover. I've been with the company, just celebrated 9 years. Love what I do, love this company. And I'm excited to be able to share kind of my thoughts and the meaning behind Passover.
Excellent. Andy, over to you.
Hello. My name is Andy Rothbaum. I am the VP of Portfolio on the West Coast for California and Washington. I just celebrated my 10th year anniversary with Winebo and have been out on the West Coast now for a little over 3 years with my family, and live in Sonoma County, California, and excited to share my perspective on what the Passover holiday is all about as well.
Excellent.
Awesome. Well, thank you.
Thank you for joining us, and congrats on your 10-year anniversary, Andy. That's fantastic. I'm coming up on my 5, so it's a good feeling. All right, let's jump into it. So we are here to talk about Passover. So really, what is Passover and what does it mean and why do we do it?
So I'll jump in here. So Passover is a celebration when the Jews were freed from slavery in Egypt. So anybody who's read the Bible, you know, particularly the Old Testament, first 5 books, you know, there's a lot of history about the Jews being slaves. And there was a super famous movie called, I think it was called The Bible with Yul Brynner. I think I watched it, you know, religiously every year as a kid. I think everyone did. But it really kind of details the history of the Jews being enslaved in Egypt. And really Passover is the celebration of us being liberated from that slavery and kind of going out and spending, you know, we talk about 40 days and 40 nights in the desert. And then you kind of slowly roll into Moses, the parting of the Red Sea. We've all heard this story. So anyway, it's really that, that liberation, we celebrate with a Seder. It's actually, In my family, we've always done kind of a one-night Seder. Andy, I don't know if you did a one-night or a two-night, but you can, you know, tradition says it's usually 2 nights. The holiday itself lasts for about 7 or 8 days, depending on, you know, where you are. If you're a, if you're a Hasidic, or if you're a conservative, or if you're Reform like myself. So we kind of do one. There's a book that you follow. There's a kind of a progression to the Seder. There's prayers, the 4 questions, obviously. But and then obviously it ends with a meal and then singing. The singing part is optional as far as it was in my family. I'm not a very good singer. So it's Passover is derived from the word Pesach, which means to pass over. And that really refers to when during the 10 plagues, one of the plagues was, you know, the death of the firstborn Egyptian child, firstborn male Egyptian child, and the homes of the Jewish slaves were passed over because they were spared from that plague. So that really is kind of what it all kind of comes back to.
Okay, interesting.
Mm-hmm. So we don't do any singing at our house. not until we're, you know, on the floor from the wine, but no, what I will say is it's one of the most important holidays in the Jewish faith. I mean, it's not, you know, not the most important, but as Matt said, it's the story of becoming free from Egypt, and the foods are symbolic. And so, you know, thus we go through the history, and there's a lot of ritual to it. And so we'll read through the Haggadah, which is basically it's the story. And, you know, at the same time, it's also meant to be kind of a relaxing thing. I mean, you know, you're supposed to have pillows on the chairs, and it's, you know, symbolizes the rest and rejoicing from that exodus from Egypt that Matt talked about. And so, you know, for us, it's a lot about getting a connection to the history of the Jewish people and connecting with what's going on today as a family.
And it is a true celebration. Yeah, a lot of our holidays can kind of be, you know, say, I don't want to say morose is not the right word, but they're very serious and whatnot, and this is a true celebration. This is meant to be fun. It's meant to be a time of joy and a time of happiness, obviously.
And I think, Matt, you know, there's one of the things that's important too, right, is the, you know, the six foods and what they symbolize. So that might be something good for us to discuss too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the Seder is really this service where you, again, as Andy said, you read the Haggadah and you kind of retell the story. And, you know, on every table really is the Seder plate. And on that plate are really the foods that are very symbolic. So I'll kind of read through them really quickly. The maror, which is essentially horseradish, and it kind of represents the bitterness of slavery. The haseret, which is the bitter vegetable, again, also kind of symbolizing the bitterness of slavery. The haruset, which is actually a really delicious mix of apples, nuts, honey and spices. It kind of symbolizes the mortar that we built. The slaves in Egypt built all of these Egyptian structures with the karpas, which is celery, or which represents hope. There's a lamb shank bone, which is the animal that we would offer to God as a sacrifice. It was eaten in ancient times. We don't necessarily eat it now. And then there's a kind of a scorched hard boiled egg, the beitza, you know, which is the symbol of the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem. So, and then in the center of the Seder plate is really kind of the seventh piece of it, and it's salt water. So you dip the karpas in the salt water during the service, and that, again, the salt water represents the tears, you know, that the Jews shed during slavery. So again, it's really that kind of, again, as Andy said, that connection right back to what actually happened in, you know, in those ancient times, and us as Jews today celebrating that, feeling that kind of same pain, but then also the celebration of the liberation.
That's awesome. I appreciate both you two providing your spin on the history and the background of Passover. Not many people know this, but I'm actually Jewish as well. I had studied Reform Judaism, and some of these foods that you're bringing up, the kugel and the matzah ball soup, great memories of my mom actually making some of those dishes. And of course, the manischewitz with the horseradish on top of it. I love that stuff.
Welcome as a MOT, Brian, a member of the tribe. Always good to have you.
Thank you. So if you could tell me, what's the importance of it to you, your family, and then those traditions that you hold each year to this holiday?
Go ahead, Andy. Go ahead.
You know, for us, and I preface by saying that, you know, I wasn't raised in an overly religious household. So it wasn't until, you know, my wife and I decided to, you know, get married and start a family that we really explored the Jewish faith, and my wife converted over to Judaism. And so for us, it's about understanding the history of the Jewish people and the plights of the Jewish people. But it also helps you kind of understand like current plights that are going on in the world right now. And so we talk about those things. And we also, we try to do it to be close as a family. We don't often sit down all at the same time and have a meal together. So it gives us an opportunity to talk about what we're proud or thankful for. And, you know, arguably one of the more important reasons, which is the case in a lot of Jewish holidays, is to drink a lot of wine. So there's that.
Love it. Love it. You know, on my end, it's kind of a similar story. I was raised in a Reform household, but we did celebrate kind of the big holidays with family and friends. So, you know, Passover was always that kind of Super Bowl. It's usually the longest of the holidays as far as the time spent actually doing the Seder itself and whatnot. I mean, again, if you're, you know, if you've done one of these, when I was a kid, it seemed like it would go on for hours. You know, I mean, it could be 4, 5, 6 hours if you're reading every single word on every single page and reading every single page all the way to the end. So it can be quite daunting as a, you know, 4, 5, 6-year-old, 10-year-old. Yeah, because again, there's the people we celebrated with were a little bit more conservative. So the service was actually read in Hebrew and then translated in English. So again, it kind of doubles the time. But again, I think it, you know, at the end, there's the payoff with the meal. And then obviously the Manischewitz is terrible wine, but you know, as a Jewish person, it's just kind of part of your ethos. But yes, it's overeating and overconsumption of, you know, what has kind of come delicious foods over the years. And again, I sell again to kind of hand down that you know, that tradition down to my kids. I have a 16-year-old daughter and 11-year-old son. My daughter was bat mitzvah 3 years ago. So she's, you know, in the thick of it. And my son, you know, will have his mitzvah in a couple of years. And it's really just that kind of, you know, year in and year out, you know, kind of remembering and handing down those traditions from generation to generation.
I love the reference you made about Passover being like the Super Bowl, the Jewish Super Bowl. That's awesome.
Yeah, and as Matt said, it is important that, you know, we talked about the symbolic foods, but the actual meal is more of a traditional, you know, Jewish cuisine. So you got your matzo ball soup and brisket and of course, matzah, the unleavened bread, which is really like a cracker or a cardboard, but we make it delicious, and you know, and kugel and everything else with that, and yeah. And then something else that's kind of, you know, tradition is the Afikoman hunt, which is, you know, oddly enough, hiding a piece of that matzah somewhere in the house and let the kids hunt for it, and there's usually a prize with it as well. So that's always fun to do. Although my kids are getting a little old for the hunt as well, but. My oldest, who you know, had a B'nai Mitzvah, is actually teaching at the temples now. So they will be working with the kids in this Passover to do
fantastic
the hunt. So yeah, they've definitely taken it on.
That kind of rolls into a little bit of what are you doing for this year? What do you have planned for this year's Passover? Andy, we'll start with you.
Yeah, so I mean, we traditionally do the first night Seder dinner at home, and depending on the year and what's going on in our lives, you know, we may invite a couple of people over to join us, close friends. This year, it's just going to be a little quieter for us. Just you know, isn't one of these years where we feel compelled to do a big celebration. But then we usually do the second night at the temple. And that's okay. where my oldest will be, working with the kids. Yeah, that's what we've got planned. All the traditional foods though.
Excellent. Matt, what about you?
You know, again, similar story. I actually like to invite kind of non-Jewish people to, you know, two of my Seder. Jen's been there. I've had some other friends there. Because again, it's not mysterious. It's kind of still steeped in the Bible, but a lot of people don't, you know, they hear these words, Passover and Pesach and matzah ball and, you know, gefilte fish, unfortunately. They hear all these kind of words and they're like, I don't understand all this. And then they come and, you know, it is about the meal, but it's also about sharing, you know, the story and the tradition. So, you know, we'll have some friends over. We just do the one night. We don't typically do the second night. It usually just kind of comes down to time and attention span of my kids. So we do the traditional dinner. We start with the egg and the matzah, and we roll we skip the gefilte fish. We're not going to talk about that. We skip that. roll into, you know, the matzah ball soup. We will eat matzah and haroset on it all week long. One thing we didn't mention is, you know, my wife, if you keep Passover, which they call keeping Passover, yeah, you don't eat you don't eat leavened bread, so you don't eat really any type of carb all week except for matzah. So if you're having any type of sandwich, any type of bread, certain sects of Judaism don't eat rice, depending on how you were brought up. So there's certain things that you don't eat throughout the week, as a kind of a continued celebration. So my wife and kids will only eat matzah this week, and so they make all their sandwiches and everything on matzah. And there's we'll have cake that has no flour in it. Again, this is kind of going back to the story, as the Jews were, you know, going across the desert, they didn't have time to stop and wait for their bread to rise. So that's kind of, you know, symbolic of, you know, all their bread was unleavened. It was basically flat. So they, so we kind of celebrate that by not eating leavened bread, if you will. We'll do the brisket. I got an awesome brisket recipe. It's better than my mother-in-law's. So my father-in-law said. So my mother-in-law is coming in, so she'll celebrate with us again this year. We have a kids version of the Haggadah. So it is definitely a kind of stripped down version. We can usually get through that in about 30 to 45 minutes. So it hits all the highlights, but doesn't go too far in where we kind of tend to start to lose, those who can't pay attention very long.
Gotcha.
Yeah. To what Matt said, just really quick, is that we do that as well. The kids do, you know, peanut butter and jelly on matzah, and my wife makes a dessert with like walnuts and caramel and chocolate and stuff all over the matzah. It's actually really good. But we also kind of clean out the pantry of those foods and put them off to the side as well. And the first year we actually did this, my wife was cooking the brisket, because Matt talked about how awesome his recipe is. My wife tried the recipe the first year, and we kept the meat wasn't cooking through. It was still pink, and we couldn't figure out why after hours and hours. So we just finally went ahead and served it. And our guests were asking if it was traditional to have the brisket so salty, only to realize that we made the mistake and did a corned beef brisket.
Oh no.
Instead of a traditional brisket. So it was, let's just say it was unedible that year. I think we ended up doing something totally different. So
that's awesome.
Funny side piece to that. I did the exact same thing like 5 years ago. My wife bought the brisket and she brought a corned beef, and it was the same thing. I was like slicing it. I'm like, what is going on here? And it turned out it was a corned beef brisket. So you were not alone, my friend.
So be careful out there.
That's right.
So now, big question, with us working at a wine and spirits organization, do you have any specific wine that you share your Passover Seder?
I mean, Manischewitz is kind of rules the roost. It is kind of the sacramental wine that is shared. We do that. We do have that for the kids. We let them sip a little bit. They don't go too crazy. And we use that as the sacramental wine during the Seder. But we always open up something that's, you know, really, really nice. Again, in that kind of celebratory fashion. My wife and I are huge fans of Italian, so it's usually a Brunello, a Barolo, something along those lines. You can kind of go crazy, but we tend to keep it a little bit more focused on the things that she and I really, really like.
Yeah, we're pretty, you know, lenient on the rules and stuff as well. So, you know, we'll usually start with some bubbles of some sort, and then dinner is usually, you know, I save some of the best bottles for events like this. So, you know, I'll open some single vineyard Pinots and, you know, big reds, so cabs and things like that for the brisket. And as far as the Manischewitz goes, we don't feel too that it's important to have the bottle or to drink the Manischewitz more. We just kind of keep the bottle close as a symbolism, but we don't partake in the Manischewitz, thank God, anymore.
What exactly is Manischewitz? I'm not familiar.
It's Concord grape. It's like a sweet grape that's made into a wine. Kool-Aid sweet. If you've never had it, I say it's terrible. It's terrible because it's wine, but it's not
all
wine like a wine boat person.
It tastes like grape candy or something. You know, sweet grape juice.
Well, that was one thing I didn't know. I'm assuming some other people wanted the answer to that question too. Is there anything else that you guys want to share with the world of wine bow?
You know, what I'd like to say is, you know, obviously there's a lot going on in the world right now, and you know, with the war and the conflict going on in the Middle East raging on, you know, like a lot of you know, Jews, we continue to pray for a peaceful resolution to the conflict on both sides, and hope that, you know, Palestinians and Israelis alike get home to their families safe.
Thank you for that. I agree.
Yeah, well said, Andy.
Well said.
Matt, do you have anything you want to share with the world of wine, Bo?
Not really, honestly. I invite anyone to ask questions. You know, religion is such a personal thing to each individual person. I grew up, you know, I was raised Jewish. My father actually, much like Annie, he married a non-Jewish woman. She converted, you know, went through the whole process, learned Hebrew and whatnot. So I was raised Jewish, you know, bar mitzvah, you know, it's been my religion. I went to Presbyterian high school. My favorite class was the Bible. I invite people to ask a lot of questions. Again, there's no mystery here. There, you know, religion should be. It's all kind of my world really is kind of shared with the same history. It's just kind of you know, which direction you went, what you believe and what you don't believe. But it all started in the same place, in my opinion. So you know, I invite people to ask a lot of questions, and I'm an open book and you know, happy to discuss you know, my beliefs that's it.
Awesome. Well, Matt and Andy, it's been a pleasure to have you both on our podcast recording. Thank you both for joining.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having us.
Of course. Well, we thoroughly enjoyed this discussion. Appreciate your dedication and commitment for our DEI initiative. As we open this new year, we're now in April. In 2024, we've closed the chapter on our 15th podcast now, season 2, episode 3. Looking forward to keeping up with the momentum going into this year and our future guest speakers. And of course, as always, we enjoy learning from others. Thank you.
Remember, Winebo, your voice matters. This is your platform for the world of Winebo. Who do you want to hear from, or what topic would you like us to discuss next? You can email us at diversity@winebo.com or reach out to any DEI member. This is the DEI Uncorked Podcast. Let's continue to look inside.